time for In and Around the House with Tony Wirtz and Ernie Brown. Got a question? Call us at 749-B105. Yeah, let's join Tony Wirtz and Ernie Brown for In and Around the House.
Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the Swamp. In and Around the House. It's just a little soggy outside with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We've got a lot of wet ground to cover. It looks like it's going to continue to rain for today and tomorrow. We'll check that complete Al Sleet AccuGuessed forecast coming up in just a little bit. Morning, Tony.
Morning, Ernie. It is wet.
I see you have a rather large collections of books over there.
I do.
You're studying for an exam?
No. Sometimes I feel like I am.
Yeah.
You know, I just, I don't know. I'm always picking up. My problem is my collection's too big.
I've heard that about
periodicals and gardening books and magazines. And boy, sometimes you think you're going to get to read some, you know, through some of those, and I just don't.
And it's a very busy time of the year for all of our local leaders and independently owned and operated garden centers, and you just don't have a moment to yourself to sit down and read.
It's crazy. You're absolutely right. And yesterday, I raced home after work, and you know, I cut the grass because they're calling for more rain.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't want to fall behind. Mm-hmm. And I also, at the same time, when I was finished, my neighbor was kind enough to come over and give me a hand. I cleaned out my gutters. Oh, yeah. You know, it's just the other day when it was raining, it wasn't, you know, we had a couple of downpours, but I would just hear it come over and hit the bay roof, the copper roof.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, it sounds like Niagara Falls up there.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know what? When you have all that water, that's where mosquitoes like to hang out too, come to think of it.
Yeah. And you never think of it when it's sunny out.
No.
But when it's raining.
That's right.
I should have gotten up there earlier.
It was wet too down in the backyard. So we need to dry out a little bit. I think, what does the forecast look like next week? It's supposed to be really, really, really nice.
Well, we're hoping that the showers do clear out, but we're expected to have rain for today, tomorrow, and then sun on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, highs in the mid-70s. So.
It's not bad.
No.
I'll take it. And also Memorial Weekend, you know?
Yes.
Don't let the rain rain on your parade. Enjoy it. Enjoy it in some shape, fashion, or form.
Yep. Put on the protective gear and go support the parades and the local events.
It's supposed to be nice Monday, too. So
yeah.
that's what we have to look forward to, that's for sure.
Right.
And it's been an interesting season, to say the least, as well. You know, I'm really concerned about some of our pre-emergent products and how well they're going to hold up to all the rain that we've had.
Mm-hmm.
We've had quite a bit, and because of that, you can pretty much expect some of those pre-emergent products to start to wear a little thin, you know, not give us that longevity element that they're capable of giving us, because, you know, the rain, as it just breaks it down and flushes it through the soil surface, we need to maybe regroup and think about reapplying some of those products, you know, in our landscape beds, also in our lawns.
Mm-hmm.
That's how things sneak in. And you never know what comes our way throughout the course of a growing season. But sometimes if it's an abundance of moisture, it reduces the effectiveness. Effectiveness of our pre-emergence.
Does. And we have had plenty of rain to wash it away. And sadly, more of it on the way. So, you know, the old saying that April showers bring May flowers. We should be covered in flowers right now, but the rain has been a little late.
Yeah, there are a few.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been really still steady and busy in the garden center world. A lot of the nurseries here throughout the tri-state area, we're plumb full of product. You know, just because it's raining this weekend doesn't mean that you cannot come in and shop undercover, see what we still have on hand, a great selection. We still have a lot of planting time. I've had of all of us, so don't think that, you know, we're getting into June, mm-hmm. which is hard to believe, and which is, by the way, we're going to touch on this after a while, too. June is National Perennial Month.
Wow.
That's when you get to see all the perennials, for the most part, at your local garden centers and nurseries in their prime, because things are starting to really show a lot of beautiful color.
Nice.
I like
it. Yeah. You know, our clematis burst open the other day, which we hadn't really had a chance to appreciate. The new one put in the ground, I think, about 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And this might be the third year, and it had a tremendous growth spurt. And I snapped a photo of it, so I'm gonna send it to Johnny. We're gonna put it up on our page.
Photo buggy.
Yeah, and boy, it's just brilliant right now. But it's about 3.5-4 feet tall.
Awesome. Where is it located? I know you had the one out front on the mailbox.
Yeah, and that one's starting to bloom.
Mm-hmm.
This one is on the, as you walk down the sidewalk, headed toward the backyard, on the left-hand side right by the house, right at the top of the driveway wall.
What color is it?
You know...
You said that these petals have opened up. I was just curious.
It looks to me like it's blue, but it could be purple. I mean,
right?
You know, do they? There aren't any blue.
Yeah, there are blue, and there's a purplish blue. Okay. There's red. There's white. There's pink. There's all types of colors of blooming clematis.
Okay.
Clematis.
I will, when my wife wakes up here in a little bit,
you took a photo? Yeah. I'll tell you what color it is if you need some help there.
Okay.
I'll shake it out of you.
I'll send that to John right now. We'll get that posted on our Facebook page, and then you can check it out and see if you agree with Tony's color analysis.
But you know, a lot of perennials, they're in bloom. They're looking good, too. It's that time of year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's hard to believe we're at the end of May.
Already.
Are you you going to do any swimming this upcoming week since they open up the pools?
I won't be. just as much as I'd love to.
Throw a big old cannonball. Come on, Ernie. Throw out some of those.
My favorites.
I bet you were the swimming champ out of Pleasure Island, weren't you?
I wasn't a swimming champ, but.
Were you ever a lifeguard out there?
Oh, for years. Yeah.
Did you ever have to save anybody?
Matter of fact, I did.
At the aisle?
I did. My fair share, and had to help remove a couple, and then.
What do you mean remove a couple? Like
a couple of struggling swimmers, get in the water and assist them, and then we did have this was a long time ago, a 7-year-old boy that we revived and helped.
Hmm.
You know? There were several of us involved in that, so it was an awful lot of fun, but there were some intense moments.
That was a big old pool.
It was.
Was it? You know how people would always say, oh, that's part of the creek. It's creek water.
It was creek water that was brought in and then pumped through filters. And then it originally was a lake. And what he would do is drain it little by little and then concrete it till we got it all concreted. But it was gigantic.
It was a neat place.
It was a wonderful place.
I spent a lot of time out there. Who was the owner, by the way?
George Aloysius Winholtz.
George Aloysius Winholtz?
Yep.
Man, it sounds like you were pretty tight and personal with George Allen.
Bud.
Winholtz.
Everybody called him Bud.
Okay, and that's the wife, name I remember, Bud.
Yeah.
So that was his nickname.
And his wife's name was Queenie. And then Charlie Robinson bought it from Bud, and he had it for the last part of its life.
Those were good old days.
Yes, there were.
Pleasure out.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. When we come back,
we're going to talk about 5 easy top perennials. If you're a novice gardener and you're thinking about growing some perennials, these are 5 that I would certainly recommend that you pick up at your local garden centers and nurseries when we come back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And before we went into the break, we were talking a little bit about we're at the end of May. It's hard to believe. It's Memorial Weekend. And happy Memorial Weekend to everybody. And as we move from May into June, I said a moment ago, June is National Perennial Month. And I'm thinking about perennials because right now, Ernie, you're starting to see where perennials are. You know, they're starting to shine. They're coming into their own. They're showing a lot of color in the garden centers and nurseries. And and before we went into the break, you know, I was just thinking, sometimes when you talk about perennials, a lot of people who are interested in perennials that don't know a lot about perennials are somewhat intimidated. And I was just thinking the other day, what would be my top 5 that I would suggest to somebody that says, hey, I'm a novice at this.
Mm-hmm.
I want to give it a shot. What would they be? Give me one, Ernie.
Where would they start?
Where would they start? Well, first I want to say the difference between an annual and a perennial is an annual comes back only if it reseeds itself. It's once a year.
Mm-hmm.
It's an annual. You know, sometimes you'll see them come back after they reseed and do their thing if everything's just right. A perennial is definitely that. It comes back year after year. However, there are some perennials that are longer lived than others.
Mm-hmm.
So perennials, they're fun to grow. They're easy to grow. There's so many varieties of perennials available. And they don't always give us that power of bloom like our annuals do.
Right.
But still, you know, we get those beautiful blooming periods and cycles from perennials that they are well worth having in the garden. Just to give you an example, one of my top five is one called Nepeta Catmint.
Okay.
You'll usually see it a couple of different names out there in the garden centers, maybe Blue Wonder. There's another one that I really like a lot called Cat's Meow, Walker's Low. And right down in front of the studio here, when we come into the building, did you ever notice those blue, like lavender, purplish-looking, spiking,
yes,
spikish plants,
yeah,
that are growing and blooming? That's Nepeta.
Uh-huh.
Easy to grow, full sun, anywhere from 15 to 20 inches in height. It varies. Foliage is attractive. And, you know, it blooms for some time. Spring, going into the latter part of spring, maybe early part of summer. And when the blooms start to fade, you can cut those back. And you still have nice-looking foliage. You're keeping things looking nice and tidy. And then you'll get a little second round of some reblooming action. So one of my top five perennials for the novice would be Nepeta Catmint. So look for that at your local garden centers and nurseries. Easy to grow, and it's not difficult, and you'll be successful with it. So just check that one out. Another one, as simple as it sounds, number two on my list would be Leucanthemum, the Shasta Daisy, one in particular called Becky. It's bloom period, usually sometime late June going into July. And it, too, is an easy-to-grow perennial. It gets around 3 foot in height. It will naturalize and get larger. You'll get a pretty sizable clump of the Leucanthemum. Uh-huh. So that would be on my list for the novice gardener that's interested in growing some perennials. It, too, likes sun. So right there, you got two easy ones to grow right off the bat. Nepeta and Leucanthemum, the Shasta Daisy.
Now, do you have to, I'm certain you do, but what about considering all day sun, light sun, medium, early? Are those two the same, or are they each plant different there? You just,
oh, they're totally different, but they all take full sun. And when we say full sun, I'm always looking at full sun being at least 6 hours of sun a day, mm-hmm, or more.
Okay.
Okay. I guess it's really confusing.
Yeah, because it could get 6 hours of morning sun and then be shaded for the rest of the afternoon.
It could.
But
it
would, just the reverse.
Right. Very, very much so. But, and usually a plant will tell you, and I'm saying that facetiously, if a plant is not blooming like it's capable of blooming,
mm-hmm,
it's really telling us, hey, you know, move me, pay attention to me.
Right.
I'll do better somewhere else.
I'm struggling over here.
Yeah,
I'm
So it doesn't always necessarily mean that a plant will die if it's not in the right location, but it just won't give you that bloom production, the power of blooms that it can give you. And it tells us, hey, move me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a hanging basket. You know, if you have a nice annual hanging basket, it's not giving you the bloom production, move it to a little sunnier location. Third on my list, it's an old one. It's been around for a while. It's goof-proof in a lot of ways, I say.
Ernie-proof.
Ernie-proof. Echinacea, purple coneflower. Again, a great plant for the novice perennial gardener. Somebody that's wanting to start out with something that's easy to grow. It, too, loves the sun. And right now, you're starting to see a lot of the echinaceas come into their own. And if you're really looking for some hardy echinaceas, there's so many varieties out there. You can't go wrong with the Sombrero series. Look for those at your local garden centers and nurseries.
Sombrero.
Sombrero, yes. Coneflowers, you know, they can grow to various heights. The one we're talking about, Echinacea purpurea magnus, That's the old purple coneflower. That's the one you can trust, and every year you can rely upon it. Gets like about 36 inches in height. Loves the sun.
Nice.
Another one that I really like a lot, this is like number four on my list, is Amsonia. That's another wonderful perennial. Just gives you some seasonal interest. You get these blue blooms on it. There's Blue Star, and there's also another one called Hubrecti. Little different foliage between the two. Both of those, however, are Amsonias. And wonderful, just stunning bronze color in the fall. Very interesting in the fall season.
Got a few more on your list?
I have one more.
Okay.
So we're talking about five of my top perennials since we're approaching June, which is National Perennial Month. Last but not least, it's one that's been around for a little bit. And as a matter of fact, I believe it was a perennial plant of the year a few years ago. And that's the, it's a hardy geranium called Roseanne.
Mm-hmm.
And grows about 10 to 15 inches in height. Blooms all summer. Nice and compact, rounded shape, you know, once it's established. And you can't go wrong with those five. Nepeta, Leucanthemum Becky, Shasta Daisy, Purple Coneflower, Echinacea Magnus, Amsonia, Blue Star, Hubrecti, or Geranium Roseanne. If you're a novice gardener and you want to get into perennials for the sun, those five, you can't beat them. Get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. Ask for those. And if you need me to repeat those, call, give us a shout, say repeat those again. We'll try and get them out on our Facebook page. You can't go wrong.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we need to pause for a moment, but when we come back,
we'll continue the course, and we'll talk about five for the shade. How's that?
All right. Before we get into the break, I want to remind you, B105's world's largest garage sale is next Sunday, June the 4th, 7 a.m. to 1 p.m., Turfway Park in Florence. You can purchase your spot now on B105.com. Special thanks to Ohio Mulch and LKQ. Pick your parts. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with your local home and garden guys, Tony and Ernie. And we've been covering an awful lot of ground this morning and getting you ready. It's Memorial Day weekend. There'll be a lot of people gathering at your house, and you'll be going to places. You want everything to look just right.
Oh, tell me about it. Everybody's been in the garden center picking up mulch and trying to tidy up things and get everything into ship shape and making it look good for all their guests this weekend. What about you, Ernie? Did you do any mulching?
As a matter of fact, I carried and cut the bags open and got it in the area, and Lisa did all of the mulching.
I like that. Mm-hmm. Good job.
We supported our local high school football program, and it was kind of nice to have the young men, much younger men, bring the bags to the house and, you know, put them close to it. And Lisa really worked very hard to get that part done.
Sounds like she did. And you did your job just cutting the bag.
Cutting the bag safely.
Good boy.
I had the safety in mind. I had the protective wear on. And
good man.
Yeah, and then we recycled the bags as we should have been doing. But it's nice.
I like it.
Yeah.
And before we went into the break, we were talking about some of our easy to grow perennials. If you're the novice and you're trying to get into perennial gardening, we were just talking a moment ago about some of those that will do well in the sun for you. Also, just a handful here that you'll find to do really well for you in a shade garden if, in fact, you have shade. Not all of us have sun.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorites in the shade garden is, and everybody pronounces this one totally different. Some people call it Brunera. Some call it Brunera. But none of the less, an awesome, awesome shade plant. It really is. And one I would consider or encourage you to look for at your local garden centers and nurseries is one called Jack Frost. And you'll love the foliage on this particular plant.
Yeah.
It's a great perennial for the shade. You know, if you get some morning sun, that's perfectly fine. Or if you're in one of those situations where, you know, you get a little bit of dappled light, which I like that kind of filtered sun and shade. That combination just makes for some wonderful, wonderful beds. But you'll like the foliage of this. It's kind of, you'll see this green veining in this silver foliage. It's really, really cool. And on top of that, it gets a wonderful looking blue bloom in the spring. So you can't go wrong with it. Well behaved, so to speak. You know, it probably gets about 15 inches, give or take, in height. A nice spread equally as well. So look for Brunera at your local garden centers and nurseries. It's a wonderful, wonderful shade plant and a shade garden. And you're not going to go wrong picking up this one. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that I really, really like a lot. Sometimes you don't see it too often. It's one of those that loves to shade. And I remembered running into this particular perennial plant years ago at the old Cincinnati Flower Show when it was when it was held at Ault Park. That was the flower show, the one they had at Ault Park. And this particular plant, I fell in love with it, but it's just because it was kind of interesting. I like the shape, the heart-shaped leaf with some distinguishing color in it and veining. And that is one called Epimedium Barrenwort. Love it. Sulfurium is the one that I have in my backyard down in the yard. Gets a yellowish bloom in the spring months. And it once it's established, it will just tolerate dry shade like nobody's business. Mm. I don't even look at it. You know, and there it is. It's been there for over 15 years.
Wow.
So it's one well worth looking for if you can find it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see it too often, but occasionally it's there. And if you see it, pick it up. Again, you'll only find out when more than likely at your local home and garden centers. Your independent garden centers. People that know about it.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment when we come back.
Got a couple more to talk about in the shade garden.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been covering a lot of ground talking about plants. You know, everyone was chomping at the bit, waiting for Mother's Day. It has come and gone. Memorial Day weekend is on top of us. And now is the opportunity to get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center.
Play with that wrapper a little more over there. Wrap it up, Ernie.
Wrap it up.
What is that, a big candy bar you just
tore up?
That
was a protein bar. I'm all about the healthy stuff now.
You're killing me. This week.
for the moment. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We've been talking a lot about plants. You got some more over there you want
to see. Yeah, just, you know, it's hard to believe that it's Memorial Weekend. You know, May has come and gone, and we're turning the corner going into June. And I just thought, you know, just we'll throw it out there. June's National Perennial Month.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself the other day, we'll talk a little bit about some perennials, you know, kind of for the novice gardener, you know, somebody that wants to try it without feeling intimidated in any way, shape, or form.
Uh-huh.
You know, and get out to your local garden centers and nurseries and look for some of these perennials that we're talking about. A moment ago, we talked a little bit about my top five for the novice perennial gardener to get started with for sun. And we're still, right now, we're talking about some of the shade perennials for the novice perennial gardener that wants to get started with maybe some shade perennials if you have shade. And we had already covered Brunera, however you want to call it, and Epimedium. So another one on my list is Tiarella.
Tiarella.
Foam flower, yes. Hmm. I like this particular plant, and it's been around a while, and we've come a long way with it. I'll tell you in a moment how we've come a long way with it.
Mm-hmm.
But Tiarella, look for a couple that are well worth having in the shade garden at your local garden centers and nurseries. And that is one called Spring Symphony, and the other one is Sugar and Spice. You'll like Sugar and Spice because it has the most beautiful foliage about it. It's kind of a glossy green, kind of dissected leaf-looking type of foliage, which has an interesting color in the center of it. It's almost like a purplish, blackish blotching. And it gets lightly fragrant pink and white blooms. And Tiarella is one worth having in the shade garden as well. So that is one you need to look for. Sugar and Spice. You like sugar.
I don't know
about spices.
All.
You like stuff
I like
with sugar.
Spices too.
But I like it. And when I was talking about how Tiarella has evolved, it has kind of worked hand-in-hand with another perennial plant called Heuchera.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have Tiarella that's been crossed with Heuchera, and we call those Tiarellas. So you're starting to see a lot of those at your garden centers as well. Look for them. They're very interesting plants. The foliage is unique, different colors. They're bold, they're striking, and just great for the shade garden. And if you're getting a little bit of that dappled sun or morning sun, that's perfectly fine as well. It's not going to burn the foliage. It only makes them and enhances the color of the foliage even better.
Mm-hmm. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And I think we have that picture up on our Facebook page of the purple clematis. And you call it chlamydius?
No.
No? What do you call it?
I call it clematis.
Clematis?
But if you
but I've heard different people use different names for that.
The plant police would correct you and say clematis.
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 Okay.
The English, as they say it,
clematis. A spot thereof.
Mm-hmm, mate.
But it's up on our Facebook page, and my wife, Lisa, was up and sent me a text, said she was awake and was listening, and I said, well, we're going to post this picture, but I don't know what color it is. And
it's too bad.
It is purple.
It's too bad.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
I didn't see it yet.
Oh, it is. It is gorgeous. And we can't wait for it to climb up the rest of that post there by the...
Yeah, by next year, I think it'll cover your house.
Oh,
just,
man.
It will engulf it. It'll total it. You won't be able to see out or in.
Well, the one that we have out on the mailbox post is a darker color than that one. So it's just now starting to bloom, but it's a much larger
plant. So you pick up the shades. You can tell if it's a shade darker or a shade lighter.
Yeah. Yeah, I just thought they look blue to me. They both look blue. One looks like a darker blue than the other. But also, coming up a little later on, I'm looking for a picture of the bed on the side of the house where all the cannas are. They are really strong right now. Can't wait for them to start blooming.
Strong like Ernie?
Strong like bull, yes. Yeah. That's what Pappy always says. You strong like bull.
I think everybody should have an Indian name.
I know what mine is.
What is it?
Mine is Standing Warhorse.
Standing Warhorse? Mm-hmm. Tina gave me one. She calls me Itchy Back. Because I'm always like, you scratch my back? So she said, you know what? Your Indian name is Itchy Back. I thought that was pretty good.
Since you brought that up. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Something else we're going to talk about today is you wanted to bring up tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And the topic of the conversation around the garage yesterday afternoon was all about tomatoes. And I said, well, you guys going to have to listen to the show tomorrow.
Down at Bowens?
Yeah, down at Bowens. Yeah.
Wow. Well, we'll tease them a little bit longer because that's our plant that we're going to really cover and hone in on a little bit later here in the show.
So stick around. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, when we come back.
A couple more shade plants for the novice gardener if you're getting into perennials. Give us a call, 749-B105. We'll be right back.
In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. I want to remind you to jump onto our Facebook page. It's a great way to stay connected with us. You can post pictures and post questions. We have posted a picture of one of the plants that we're pretty proud of at our house. Lisa has been working very hard to get everything looking sharp, as I know a lot of you are. And Memorial Day is sort of the kickoff of summer. And that's what these days for us, summer moves way too quickly, so you got to get it all done now.
You used to just, summers would drag by when you were a kid. And right now, that's not the case for me.
No.
Everybody that was older than I was when I was a youngster would tell me, you just wait, son. You'll find out how fast time goes by. You better make every moment count.
Oh, yeah.
I know exactly what they were talking about.
You don't know what you're talking about.
You don't know what you're talking about. You're old. Yeah, I knew more back then than I do now.
Mm-hmm.
Or I thought that I did. Anyway. So we're still going to continue our conversation about some shade perennials that I think are worthwhile having in a shade garden, especially what we're honing in on is if you're a novice gardener and you're wanting to get into some perennials, we're just kind of throwing out some easy-to-grow perennials, especially... you know, we talked about some of those for the sun. We're still on a topic of some of those for the shade. And I've yet to hit hostas, but before I do, another one that's a favorite of mine, and you can't go wrong with it. It's very distinctive looking. It just billows out. It's clump forming. It almost cascades like a waterfall once it's developed and a little older and established. And that is Japanese forest grass called Hakanakloa.
Wow.
One that I like a lot is called Areola. It's got this variegation look to it. Just Google it. I'm telling you, this is a stellar plant to have. Look for it at your local garden centers and nurseries. Japanese forest grass. It makes a statement like nobody's business, Ernie. I love that grass.
Wow.
Really looks good. And, you know, another one that I like a lot is All Gold. That's another Japanese type of forest grass. But I lean towards Areola. Just that variegated look is where it all happens.
Beautiful plant.
It is. That mm-hmm. It is. You know, another great one for the shade, we all know this, and we talk about it often, and there's so many different varieties, but you still cannot go wrong with hostas.
Nope.
You really can't.
I have to agree.
We got one in just the other day that I've not had, but it's been around for a little bit. Great blue color to it early in the season. It's one that I like a lot. It's called Humpback Whale. You know, like this kind of
humpback whale.
Humpback whale. Yes, absolutely. There's a lot of interesting names. You know, I don't know how they come up with all these names.
Yeah,
but you know, it just the hosta world is from A to Z. There's so many different varieties of hostas, a lot of different sizes. You know, one that really became popular about 3 or 4 years ago gets quite large, called Empress Wu.
I don't know that I've ever heard of that.
Empress Wu. But Empress Wu, that's another interesting hosta. Gets quite large. And then you can take it from that degree down to another real little one called Mouse Ears. Okay? Mm-hmm. So there's various sizes of hostas. They have a great application in a shade garden. And you can do so many different things with them. The textures are there. The leaf colors are always different. They're just... they just bring harmony to the shade garden, especially when you kind of dress them up or plant adjacent to them. A great companion planting with hostas are hardy ferns, perennial ferns, the ostrich fern. We were talking about ferns the other day, the tassel fern, the autumn fern. They just make for a great shade garden, and I love shade gardens because you just walk down into the shade garden, and it's you know, you got these big canopy of tree leaves over the shade garden. It's just kind of nice and cool, which relaxing.
Tranquil,
mm-hmm. All that good stuff.
And especially if there's a water feature somewhere and you're sitting there and you can hear that little trickle.
Absolutely.
Just wonderful.
Absolutely. And a lot of times in a shade garden, you know, with most of your annuals and perennials, you're going really for leaf textures and colors. Because, you know, the sun is what really helps a lot with most of our blooming plants.
Uh-huh.
So in a shade garden, you kind of sacrifice a little bit of that. Not always, but to a degree for the most part. But still, get the appreciation for textures of the foliage of specific plants, the leaf colors. That's really, in my eyes, that's where it happens. Mm-hmm. Now, we're all different. You know, a lot of people say, hey, for me, it's all pink blooms. Or others might say, hey, for me, it's all blue or it's all yellow.
Right.
It's your artwork. It's your design. It's your canvas. It's what you want in your garden. And you can do whatever you want it, you know, whatever you want to do, and it can be whatever you want it to be.
Right.
It's your artwork. That's what I tell people all the time. It's your decision, Ernie.
You are in control.
You're in control. So those are just a couple of some of the perennial plants that I think are worthwhile, you know, looking for at your local garden centers and nurseries. And we talk about our local garden centers and nurseries often, and that's because we support local businesses. That's what the communities are built upon. And on average, every dollar that you spend, 67 cents stays here in a local economy. And that's so important. Support local businesses, not just independent garden centers, all local businesses. Mm-hmm. It's so important.
Mm-hmm. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment when we come back.
You know, let's just stay of the course with perennials. I'm often asked, what perennials make for good, like, cut flowers for the table?
Oh.
Let's throw that one out there. What do you think, Ernie?
I like that. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been talking an awful lot about perennials, and Tony's going to enlighten us just a little bit. There are some of them that make for great cut flowers.
That they do. And
nothing brightens a home like freshly cut flowers.
I say that all the time.
I do it all the time.
Well, you never stop by our place to pick up cut flowers to go home.
No, apparently I cut them out in the yard and but bring them into the house.
Oh,
they're not supposed to be cut, but you know, if they accidentally get too close to the weed eater, you might as well pick them up and bring them on into the house.
I'm glad you're in touch with your masculinity. You know, you're right. Cut flowers do add a huge element to the home inside. At the kitchen table or the kitchen counter or wherever,
uh-huh.
You know, just, and it doesn't have to be a lot. It doesn't have to be a big showy vase with a lot of flowers in it. Just a few. Make it simple. Make it elegant. And, you know, we were just talking about perennials. One of my favorites, I think, makes for a wonderful cut perennial flower is one called Lobelia cardinalis. Beautiful. It's got that dark colored foliage to it with mm-hmm. just a vivid velvety red bloom. It's stunning. Yeah. It really is. And that too is also a plant that's wonderful, a perennial plant. If you have some areas in the garden that it might be a little damp or stays wet more often than not, it kind of thrives in those type of conditions. But the Lobelia cardinalis, you can't beat it.
How long can you expect cut flowers to last when you bring them into the house? And what can you do to prolong that?
Well, it's a great question, and I cannot tell you how long every flower will last. Obviously, the sooner that, you know, I mean, the fresher that it is when you cut that flower, mm-hmm. the longer that it's going to last. For example, when we get flowers in, we'll order flowers directly out of South America, Colombia, and they come up through Miami. So those flowers have been cut, they've been chilled, they're in boxes, and we need to open those up, cut them again, get them into a solution to revive them,
mm-hmm.
and that really helps prolong their bloom periods. And it all has to do with, you know, how long they've been cut prior to arriving. But coming out of your garden, you're going to get a lot more time, longevity from your cut flowers, for the most part, than you will what you buy.
Gotcha.
You know, not always. And that's not true all the way across the board, but just in general, because everything's got a lifespan. For example, I think irises make for great cut flowers.
Oh, I agree.
However, the iris bloom as a cut flower doesn't last as long as some of the other blooms. But it's still one of my favorites. And the way that it opens up and just that vivid color, that purplish blue in it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they have the yellow throat. You know, that makes for a very nice cut flower as well. So irises are well worth having in a perennial garden. You can't beat it. Also, another one of my favorites, and if you're into pollinators or looking for things that attract bees, bee balm, Monarda, that makes for a really good cut flower.
Huh.
Jacob Klein, it's a nice red. It you can't beat it. There's some of the others out there that called Pardon My Purple, Pardon My Pink. There's a lot of funny names, you know. It's just, but bee balm is a great cut flower, perennial cut flower, and also you get the other added value benefit of attracting pollinators to the garden.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, look for these. What we're talking about, look for these at your local garden centers and nurseries, and if you're wherever, just stop in and say, hey, heard the guys talking about this on In and Around the House. Jot these things down. You know, look for them at your garden centers. And I'm saying this because as we're approaching the month of June, which is National Perennial Month, that's when a lot of the perennials are in their heyday. I mean, they're shining. It's their moment. And you get to see them in bloom.
Mm-hmm. And you can always, if you're missing a name, jump onto our podcast and replay the show and then jot those names.
It's a lot to remember sometimes. You know, another one too that I think is very stunning. The only element or difference about this particular perennial is I think there's some confusion too amongst it or about this particular perennial, but one called Digitalis foxglove. you talk about a series of spiky blooms that might be anywhere from 12 to 15 inches in length, and they vary, full of these bell-shaped clustered flowers.
Right.
Stunning, I'm telling you. And those make for wonderful cut flowers to put on the table. Now, there is, when it comes to digitalis, foxglove, it is a biennial type of plant, meaning it's a two-year-old, you know, it's a two-year perennial. And what we're relying on is it blooming. And you don't want to cut all the blooms because we want those blooms to drop seed so we can have future generations of the digitalis. So there's the confusion comes here, and I don't hear this from customers. We sell one at Jackson Florist and Garden Center. It's in the Camelot series. I understand that the Camelot series is supposed to be a true perennial.
Right.
When we talk about digitalis foxglove. However, I don't get a lot of feedback from customers telling me, hey, I only had it for 2 years or 3 years or 4 years. But, you know, if someone has ever planted the digitalis in the Camelot series, I'm curious to hear what your flair or your take is on it. But still, nonetheless, it's a wonderful cut flower out of the perennial garden. Just a lot of different things. Another one, lupine.
Lupine.
Lupine. Oh, my gosh. We got some lupines in the other day. These spiky leaflet-like blooms, they radiate. They're various colors. They might be purple. They might be a magenta color. They might be a blend of colors.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very attractive. I love this plant. I love the foliage on this plant, as a matter of fact. And the flowers are like, they're pea-like in shape. And they're spectacular. You can't go wrong with lupine either. It's a very interesting perennial. However, it's not a long-lived perennial. That's the only problem. But don't let that deter you from looking for lupine. And sometimes, too, keep them in a little bit of a shaded area. They'll wilt quick when they're dry. In hot, dry summers, you know, they'll be on a decline. So we've had some of those. But still, look for that particular perennial. You can't go wrong with it. Another one, delphinium.
Delphinium.
Ooh. Yeah. You say that like you're familiar with it.
Well, it is. It's a beautiful. It's one of them that you always point out.
Delphinium. Delphinium is not an easy-to-grow perennial. It's not one of those that I would say, hey, if you're a novice and you want to try a perennial for the very first time, I'm not going to steer you down the delphinium aisle. Okay. But still, nonetheless, it's awesome. Another one, too. Nymphophia, the red hot fire poker. That's a cool plant. You ever seen those?
No.
Yeah. So the common name, people call it the red hot fire poker. That's a cool perennial plant as well. So it's just that makes for an interesting cut flower in a mixture of things on the table. I don't know. It's that time of year when I get excited about perennials as they come in. They're starting to just show those beautiful, spectacular blooms, and it's that time of year. Get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. Look for some perennials. The season's not over. We got a lot of time ahead of us. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of wonderful nursery stock still available widely throughout. And you don't have to plant everything at once. Mm-hmm. And just because you're not totally finished at the end of May, June is a great planting month.
And as you mentioned, the selection is outstanding right now.
It still is. It really is. I'm not just saying that. So, I mean, we just don't garden in May or April.
Mm-hmm.
It's a year-long process. It really is. And just because you think you might be getting a late start, it's not too late. We have a lot of stock on hand. A lot of the nurseries here locally in the tri-state area and all the garden centers, there's plenty of plant material available to make your yard look beautiful.
And your landscape beds and just, you know, now's the time to do it because you want to spend the rest of the summer doing other things.
That's right.
Entertaining guests and going to other parties and, you know, now's the time to get the work done. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Make sure you take the time to look us up and like us on Facebook. I did get a chance to get John posted the picture of clematis. Is that how you prefer to say it? Clematis?
I call it clematis.
Clematis.
You better watch how you say that. It almost sounds like a disease.
You call them tomatoes. I call them tomatoes.
I hear you.
It is a beautiful plant that when we first put it in the ground, it just sort of lingered there for the first year, the first season. And then we saw a little bit of growth last year, but this is the first year that it really burst into bloom, and that's our favorite part. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause when we come back.
I want to talk about a couple more things. Since we've had a lot of moisture, I thought this would tie in so well with perennials, since we're on a perennial topic. Perennial plants that like moist situations, and also in this hour, we're going to also revisit something, since we've had a lot of rain, we need to take a serious look at, and it all involves our landscape beds and the lawn. 749-B105.
Welcome back, you know, around
nice.
The house. I love that tune, Madness, our house. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And, you know, if weather has been very wet and soggy, but there are some plants that love this, Tony.
There are. Since we're talking about some perennial plants and we're looking outside and it's overcast, if you're just getting up and joining us, it's cloudy, a little bit of rain in the forecast. Well, just throw a little sleet my way. What's it looking like?
It's going to look just like you described it. Rain, showers, thunderstorms throughout the course of the day, today and tomorrow. And then on Monday, we are going to get a break. It's going to be sunny and rather pleasant.
When it should be,
yes.
Memorial Day.
Right.
But it's going to, you know, today's weather, don't let it hamper you. Get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. Most of us, if not all, have undercover shopping. So if we do get a little drizzle here and there, you'll still be able to shop in comfort. You'll be able to pick some things up.
That's right.
You might not put it in the ground today, but you can certainly sneak it in between now and Memorial Day or even after Memorial Day. Don't feel compelled to get it all in at one time or this weekend. We have a long season, a long, long season ahead of us, Ernie.
Even though we mentioned that summer seems to move quickly, there's planting season, shopping season, and, you know, you've got time.
Vacation season, swim season, boating season, biking season, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
I hear you. But plants for the moist sites that are plaguing you around your landscape or in your lawn or landscape beds. We're talking about perennials that like moist situations, and one I was talking about a moment ago is Lobelia. It's a wonderful, wonderful perennial plant. And Cardinalis, you can't go wrong with it. I was telling you about how vivid the red-colored bloom is on this particular plant. It will tolerate some moist soil conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Also, another favorite of mine, you don't see it often, and it's a shade plant, too, but it will tolerate some moisture, and it's one of those in the shade garden, too. When you see it wilt, you know that it's dry, and this particular plant has very interesting leaves and foliage, a beautiful yellow bloom, kind of a spiky-looking bloom,
mm-hmm.
and that is one called Ligularia. Ligularia.
Ligularia.
Ligularia. Say that real quick.
Ligularia.
There you go. Very good. And I love this particular plant. There was one that a friend of mine came into the garden center the other day and showed me a photograph that he had it from about 3 or 4 years ago. And it's another type of Ligularia called Othello. And I can't find it on any of the availability lists from people that I have sources for perennials. And if any of our good friends are listening in the garden center world that can help me out to find Othello, give me a call. Let me know. Send me a text. I need to find this particular Ligularia, by the way. But it, too, likes moisture.
Mm-hmm.
Love it, love it, love it. Also, another interesting one gets a really sizable leaf on it. One called Regersia. You don't see this one too often either. And a gentleman grew this for me a few years ago over at Krugermatics. Matt, he's no longer there. But Regersia is very interesting perennial plant that will tolerate some wet soils. Also, irises, hibiscus, you can't go wrong. Astilbe, I don't know how I forgot about Astilbe. That too is a great shade perennial. and still be able to tolerate some moist situations. So there you have it. You know, just to summarize and sum it up a little bit in a quick fashion, some of the perennials that I can tell you that will tolerate some moisture. And, you know, hostas, too, will tolerate moisture, so we can just go on and on and on. Aruncus, goat's beard, I like that. So it just, there's a lot out there. You got to get out to your local garden centers and nurseries that carry a variety of perennials so you can see these firsthand and make it happen. And also, somebody that we've not been in touch with for a long time, and maybe you have, is Tracy DeSabato.
I have been following her on Facebook, and she had a birthday not long ago, so we wished her happy birthday. But what I was thinking about while you were going through that list of plants that enjoy moist situation is our friend Lena out in Walton, who had asked us to come out. We just didn't get a chance to go visit with her. She has that part of her backyard where there's a hill that dips down, and there's always moisture there. And some of these plants might be good for her area there at the bottom of the hill.
Well, all you have to do is pick me up when it slows down. We'll take a look at it. You buy me lunch and a cold one, and I'm in.
Okay.
That's where I like to go spotting.
Is it going to be after this weekend? Will that slow down enough?
No, you need to take it out a little further.
Okay.
Yeah, just
maybe 2 weeks.
Yeah,
all right, Lena, if she listens to us every Saturday morning, we will be out there in a couple of weeks to take a look at that. And yes. Tony, we need to take a pause. When we come back, we have a question that just got posted onto our Facebook page from Zach Tolby, and we're going to address his question in just a few minutes. He's got the new house. And he's got a few things that he wants some information about.
You got it. Well, so we'll talk with Zach, and we'll also talk about some things that I think that you need to take into consideration and seriously reapply. 749-B105. We'll be right back.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And I want to remind you again, a great way for you to pose pictures and to post questions is our Facebook page. And we have had... just that happened. Zach Talby, who says he listens to the show every Saturday, and thank you very much for doing that. But he has a question. He recently purchased a home, and the yard is far from perfect. It's full of rocky soil, has dirt spots where grass won't grow. He thinks the previous owner had dogs that were constantly using areas to relieve themselves. What can I do about the grass, and how do I get it to grow? And he loves the show. Thank you.
Whoa, that's a lot.
Yeah. Let's break it down, Donnie.
Break it down. You know what's good, though, in his situation, if he in fact thinks that a lot of issues were or have been a result of dogs urinating in the yard a lot, the amount of rainfall we've been getting, that's a good thing because that flushes that through.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what it takes in a nutshell. There might be some products out there on the market that I'm not familiar with or, in fact, know if they truly work well. But really, it's just Mother Nature and you flushing it through with water.
Right.
So having said that, the other part that comes into play here, too, is, you know, I don't know how old the home is or when it was built. And being in one of those particular situations where you have rocky soil, a lot of times if there's large rocks under the topsoil surface, and when it gets really hot, you can easily distinguish a lawn that where most of it's green, and you'll see these brown bronze spots.
Mm-hmm.
And usually that might be an indicator that there's some large stone just underneath the topsoil surface. Just maybe 4 inches below, 5. And so therefore it heats up. The water doesn't stay in that area. And the best way to check for those kind of situations is to get like a spud bar. And when it's moist out like it is, go into some of those areas and just poke into the soil. And if you hit a large rock underneath, that's definitely an indicator that might be part of your problem. But for the most part, Zach, you might have to regrade some things.
Yeah.
And when you do, this is what I really want to point out. You need to bring in a good quality topsoil. Don't just choose anyone, because a lot of times people will buy topsoil bulk based on, I can get a pickup truck for $10 or $15. Well, guess what? A lot of that topsoil is coming in from various areas. It's just been excavated, and they grind it up. The texture's really nice, but there's a lot of weed seed in it. And when you do that and you introduce that to your lawn and you sow grass seed, you're going to see a combination of stuff, turf, weeds, and you're going to immediately think, I got bum grass seed. I got bad grass seed. That is the furthest from the truth, and that is why you need to, when you buy grass seed, we have to, by law, put that, there's a label there that goes with that seed to tell you how much of that seed is pure. So make sure there isn't any cheap filler in it.
Right.
And you get what you pay for. But going back to the topsoil, I would suggest when you, in fact, do this, bring over, go over to Hafner's and Sons. They're over on Wooster Road in Cincinnati. Their phone number, Zach, is 513-321-1895. That's 513-321-1895. I would contact Hafner's and Sons and just say what you're telling us. I want to sow grass seed. I want to establish my lawn, get it, you know, revamp it. And you want a good topsoil just to do that.
Would it be in his best interest to aerate the yard first or wait until it,
well,
you get some soil in it?
You could, and I like to do that in the fall, in October, to be quite honest. But you can aerate any time of the year. Right now, with the amount of moisture that's in the lawn, it would work well. And look for an aerator that has core plugs where it pulls the cores out and lays them up on top of the surface. But it doesn't do anything if it's really rocky.
Sure.
You know, so those rocks have to be removed. So you got a little bit of work ahead of you, Zach. I didn't mean to get long-winded there, but...
Oh, of course not.
And, you know, last but not least, once you get things set up and graded to where it needs to be, that's the most important thing, is to get soil-to-seed contact, get that established, and then I want you to buy a good top-quality turf grass. Fine Lawn H2O is great. You know, look for a tall fescue. You know, Central Farm and Garden has introduced that to us. It was formerly Fine Lawn Elite. You can only find it at your local garden centers and nurseries. Fine Lawn H2O, you're not going to go wrong. But first and foremost, get it graded, get rid of the stone, and you'll see a difference in your lawn. It'd be for the better.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we're going to stay on our Facebook page. We had another question come from our friend Steve Voskel, who wants to, his question is, how can I get my potted calla lilies to bloom this year? Last year, they came back. They had beautiful foliage, but no blooms. Do I need to feed them something special to make them bloom again?
I guess the real question, Steve, is I'm under the impression that you left them in a pot. And, you know, I don't know. They need to go through a gestation period, and how they're stored has a lot to do with that. But obviously they've come up blind. And, you know, and if you're this is another thing, too. We may be jumping the gun a little too early. Maybe they will put on a bloom. So it's still hard to say. I don't think that I've seen any yet that have wintered over in some landscape beds, which people are very lucky that they have, where they're blooming yet. But I just may have not seen any. But, Steve, I would probably be a little patient. And if push comes to shove, I would probably plant those just, you know, when you lift them out of the pot, put them up close to the house somewhere and see what happens. Give them a winter. Let them go through a whole cycle. Sometimes it works. I would mulch them in well enough to see what happens. But obviously something's taking place, and I can't honestly answer why.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. And one more thing about the Facebook page. You remember last week when Rob Sheenman had called and asked about the amaryllis question?
Yeah, he posted that. Beautiful.
You posted the picture, and that is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, you get a chance, jump onto our Facebook page, and it's awesome. You can stay in touch with us, post pictures, and pose questions. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment when we come back.
You need to think dimension and prodiamine, and I'm going to tell you why. 749-B105.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. I want to take a second and remind you about B105's world's largest garage sales coming up next Sunday, June the 4th, between 7 a.m. and 1 p.m. at a Turfway Park in Florence. You can purchase your spot now at B105.com. Special thanks to Ohio Mulch and to LKQ. Pick your part. And we've been covering a lot of ground this morning talking about perennials, but we want to move to the lawn because we've had so much precipitation, so much that rain have. That if you did get your lawn treatment down, you may have to consider reapplying it once it starts to dry out just a little bit. Don't do it today because it's just going to wash away again. Scattered showers for today and tomorrow. But then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, expected to be very pleasant with a high in the 70s.
I like it.
I like it. You like it?
You know, you said we've covered a lot of ground, and we have a lot of wet ground. And we've had a fair amount of rain thus far this spring. And here's where some of the concerns come in from my viewpoint. And I certainly will encourage some homeowners who are serious about keeping some things out of their lawns and mm-hmm. out of their landscape beds is to get out to your local garden centers and maybe reapply some of these pre-emergent products. There's nothing wrong with it, but what happens is when that barrier sets up on that top layer about a half inch, think about it, all the rain we've been having breaks that down. It also has utilized a lot of our nitrogen element and some of the fertilizers that we've already have used on our lawns as well too. So you will start noticing some things creeping in more than likely here before long, or maybe even your lawn looking a little not bad, but where it could use a little bit more greening power, because you know some of the nitrogen that has come along with the past fertilization is starting to wear a little thin. So therefore, I would not be opposed to this approach whatsoever. One is maybe put down another application of the All Seasons 2 from Fertilume with Prodiamine. Again, by weight, only 16% of that bag has a little bit of nitrogen to it, which will give you that little bit of boost. It's not a great deal where you might have to mow too much or often, mm-hmm. and you're going to get that protection from the prodiamine as a pre-emergent. Again, my concerns are things are starting to wear a little thin because of the precipitation, and it's only going to get thinner as we progress throughout the summer months. And because we have some fair, you know, some decent weather ahead of us, some really nice pleasant temperatures, I'm not opposed to doing this. Your other option is to use high yields dimension turf and ornamental weed and grass stopper in your landscape beds, or you can also use that on your lawn as well without having to fertilize it if you want to take that approach. And that will give you 4 months protection against anything germinating in your lawn or your landscape beds. I highly encourage you to seriously consider reapplying some of these pre-emergent products, because I know for a fact we're going to be going down the road, cruising along at, you know, at 55, and all of a sudden we're going to start seeing some things creep into our landscape beds and lawns. And right now, we can stave that off if we seriously consider reapplying another application.
Very good.
I'm not here to sell you up. I am here to do this.
To help you out.
Help you out and protect you and keep those things from creeping into the lawn and the landscape bed. So in the landscape beds and the lawn, your choice, you can use high yields, turf and ornamental, weed and grass stopper that has dimension. You can only get those products at your local garden centers and nurseries. Or I wouldn't be hesitant to put down that first step again. It's your choice. Get with your local garden center professionals at the nurseries and greenhouses and just ask them, hey, what would you do? You heard us talk about it this morning on the radio. We've had a lot of moisture. And as we progress through the summer, think about it. We get dry. We're going to water. So therefore, those variables make that product a little less effective. We need to revamp it up.
749 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we mentioned earlier about our Facebook page, a great way to stay connected with us and post pictures, post questions, and we'll answer them as quickly as possible. And also want to remind you that you know, this is a holiday weekend for all of us, and it is more than just about the cookouts or the Taste of Cincinnati. It is a weekend of reflection and to remember those who have served and sacrificed. I found something really interesting. I read a great article yesterday afternoon that this is not the weekend to be thanking veterans for their service. And the difference is that is Veterans Day. I think it's always appropriate, but even the veterans have said that this is a weekend, this is a celebration or a memorial for those who did not return. So try to keep that in mind. And, you know, like this afternoon, I'm going over to join my friends and brothers from Colonel Clay Masonic Lodge 159 and Troop 360 and the Boy Scouts. We're placing flags at the graves of the veterans over at the Linden Grove. A lot of those ceremonies going on this weekend, so make sure you take the time to pause and participate. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We need to, we need to pause for a moment. When we come back,
the plant of the week.
The plant of the week. We'll be right back.
Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, in and around the house, is ready with your plant of the week.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Each week, we feature a very special plant. Tony's got a good one today.
It has to be what you and the boys were talking about down at Boland's.
Tomatoes.
Oh, who doesn't love tomatoes?
The mystery fruit.
Yes, the mystery fruit. And for the most part, I would have to think that most, if not all, have already planted their tomato plants.
That was the topic of the conversation. Everybody is, starting to brag. Mine's this tall. I have this many blooms. I have plants already. And
oh,
yes.
So, does anyone have anything yet? I mean, that fruit. What's been going on?
No, they're all still at the stages where they're up and starting to produce. They haven't yielded any harvest.
Mine are looking pretty good. Yeah. There's some fruit on it, a little bit bigger than a golf ball. So they're coming along quite well.
Yeah.
And usually I am not the one who will try and plant too early. That's not a good thing to put yourself through, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You might get away with it, but more than likely, no. But tomatoes, it's that time of year, and it's probably one of our favorite things to grow. Most popular plant, vegetable, fruit, really it's the fruit in the garden itself. And a couple things about the tomato plant. You're going to find either it's going to be classified as a determinate or an indeterminate. And we've talked about that before. And the definition of both is this, is that the determinate is usually a type of tomato plant that will on average get to a specific height and size and produces a majority of its fruit in a given period, to whereas an indeterminate is just the opposite. You know, the plant can get whatever height and it can produce fruit off and on throughout. So that's primarily it in a nutshell. And so to give an example, let's take a cherry tomato. Most of those, like the Sweet 100, which is one of my favorites, you know, that's an indeterminate type of tomato. It can get various heights and produce off and on all the way through summer. Just to give an example. But what I really want to say about tomatoes is this. Make sure that... And I know a lot of us have space constraints, and we have a tendency to plant our tomato plants in the same spot year after year after year, and that's really not the situation you want to put yourself in. What happens is we typically start seeing disease issues come about, and it might be a wilt, it might be, you know, a late blight of some sort, or a number of different things.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens, once you start experiencing some of those situations, you know, they're pretty much there for the most part, for the duration, year after year after year. And what I like to do to kind of curb that or keep that at bay is I highly encourage you to kind of mulch around your tomato plants and your other vegetables if you're able to do this. You know, not everybody's able to do it, and they're going to say that's foolish. My garden's XYZ that's this big. I understand.
Mm-hmm.
I like to mulch with newspapers. You know, layer a sheet down, moisten it, layer another sheet down, moisten it, another sheet. I'll do about four layers. And keep in mind, when you're doing this with newspapers, it's biodegradable and it's not going to harm anything. And it also serves a couple of purposes here. One is it's a great weed suppressor. Two is it's going to keep the soil temperatures a little cooler for your tomato plants. And also it's going to help with a little bit of moisture retention. So there's three key things right there that is going to be a huge benefit. Once I use the newspaper after I planted my tomato plants, you know, I'll either use grass clippings or I will also use straw. And that combination I find works extremely well in the garden bed with weed suppression. So that's first and foremost. Now, selecting a plant in the garden center is, you know, it's not a difficult thing. You know, obviously you want to look for certain varieties. You're going to find some of your hybrid varieties, such as Big Boys, Better Boys, Jet Stars, you name it. And you're also going to find a pretty good selection these days with heirlooms. And the heirlooms are some older varieties that have been around for a while. And you can keep the seed year after year and have that specific variety throughout. And you're starting to see heirlooms take more center stage than ever before. It was just the opposite years ago. I have a little question for you, Ernie.
I've got an answer.
What year was the Big Boy tomato plant released?
Ooh.
That's a good question, right?
Yeah, now. I'm going to say 1983.
No. Blow him up, Johnny. Bam. You know, you got it all wrong. No, 1949.
That was close.
So really, you know, in the 40s, hybridizing plants and coming up with varieties of tomato plants that were more disease resistant was becoming more and more popular. Mm-hmm. And at that particular time, what happened, heirloom plants started taking a back shelf, you know, to some of the hybridized varieties. Mm-hmm. So we've come a long way. Now it's full circle if you want to term it as being, because now people are seeking after the heirlooms because they're very unique in color, a variety of different tastes, and heirlooms have an aura about them that I can't explain it. Even Vicky Tuis will tell you that. But what I really want to point out too is tomato plants do better in a just an ever so slightly acidic type of soil situation. Mm-hmm. Anywhere, just to give you a range on a pH scale, 6.2 to 6.8. And, you know, that is where they're most efficient. And when a plant's in its ideal pH range, the beauty of that situation is this, is that a plant will take in the most amount of nutrients that are made available to it. And in that pH range, you're going to be right on. And that's why it's important that we always get a soil sample and take it out to our cooperative extension offices and have that soil analyzed so we know what we're dealing with and moving forward from that point. You know, any soils that are too acidic, meaning lower than 6.2 for the most part, will be deficient in nutrients such as potassium, magnesium. So those are things that kind of, you know, fall off by the wayside. You know, they've usually leached out of the soil. They're not available to it. Now, on the flip side, if the acidity level is insufficient, where the pH might be above 6.5, 6.8, as we're explaining, the nutrients that are present will not be able to dissolve in such a way or a state that will be taken up by the plant's root system. So that's why pH levels are really important to specific plants, and every plant has its ideal range. And when I hear people, Ernie, say, yeah, I'm going to sweeten the soil by adding a little bit of ground or palletized lime. Wait a minute. Let's find out what our pH is. Mm-hmm. You know, I hear this all the time.
Check it first.
And, you know, no matter what I think or what I might suggest, and I'm sure there's other people out there who have said the same thing, you know, you're not going to convince anyone differently. But you can also acidify the soil by adding a little sulfur. So there's a couple things that you can do if your pH is too high or if it's too low. And again, I encourage you to get a pH soil sample done. Mm-hmm. And you can just do that at your local extension service. And then from that point, follow their recommended guidelines. That's really, really important. And, you know, you'll have some nice tomatoes. You really, really will. Mm-hmm. And I like the fact, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. This is important too. What's in your soil? Not what's in your wallet.
Yeah.
What's in your soil? That's the foundation that a lot of our success is really built upon. Why do you think farmers years ago worked so diligently on the farmlands, on those plots?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was making that soil ideal to grow tomatoes in. And you'll have nice looking tomatoes.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We've got more to discuss about our plant of the week. Tomatoes are the hot topic. We were talking a lot about them yesterday with my buddies as we were hanging around late Friday after mm-hmm. work. And there's more to discuss. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have been talking about our plant of the week. We selected the tomato because everyone is busy trying to get that yield, that special yield, their favorite tomato.
Oh, I know. I just bought some tomatoes yesterday, and it's like, although they're vine ripened, they still have the stems and everything on them, part of the vine. They don't even compare mm-hmm. to what you grow out there in your own garden. It's incredible. You could also grow tomatoes too, as well, and be really successful in containers. So don't be afraid to do that either. Just, you know, when it comes to tomatoes, what's really important too, as we progress throughout the season, I like to start out right off the bat staking my tomatoes right away, or putting my cages around my tomatoes right away. I want them to stay upright. A lot of times, you know, some of the old timers, they would just let them, you know, lie on their side.
Yeah.
Exactly. So keep them upright. You know, what it does, it allows for better air movement around your plant. It helps with disease issues and so forth. And it makes gardening in tighter spaces a lot easier and more efficient. I know that, and here's something else too. You know, you can just use some wooden tomato stakes. I like to use cages. A great product to use and make cages with is the that mesh that they use when they pour concrete.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about? Yep. Those make for wonderful cages. If you really want to get fancy, this year I've been selling a lot of these too as well. To my surprise, they're not cheap, but they are heavy galvanized folding tomato cages. So they're round and they're heavy duty. You can fold them in any direction and they'll lie flat, making storage simple.
Can't ask for
you
anything.
You can't ask that. For more than that. You're right. But, you know, people who are serious about tomatoes, you know, they go through certain processes. They have certain ways of doing things. And we all can share in these little hints and tips with one another.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny. I hear it all the time. This is what I do. This is what I do. This mm-hmm. is how I do it. You know, once you get onto a way of being successful, then stick with it.
Yeah.
You know, there's no wrong or right way. Everybody's got their own little thing, but what's important is just, you know, getting that soil foundation together. I can't say that enough. Something else that I find extremely, extremely beneficial, and this is from a maintenance standpoint, this is from a fertilization standpoint. I swear up and down, I am big on a product from Espoma called Tomato Tone. I don't care what anyone says. And the beauty of it is there's an element of calcium that's in this particular fertilizer. It's granular. You just sprinkle it on. You can plant with it to a degree, you know, when you plant your tomatoes initially, based upon the directions, follow those directions. And it adds that element of calcium there. And the reason why calcium is so important, it's not just important for your tomato plants, but other vegetables as well, you know, especially bell peppers. You can get blossom end rot, okay? And blossom end rot occurs typically for a couple of reasons. A lack of calcium as that fruit is developing during its growing stage. And when that happens, you know, you'll get the black blossom end rot underneath the fruit. It's a sunken, like, black lesion. And, you know, the fruit isn't any good, so throw it away. and try and make that correction as readily or as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. And you can do it with tomato tone. And you can use tomato tone on some of your other vegetables. It's more organic. It's like your plants are eating well. And look for Aspomas tomato tone at your garden centers and local nurseries. You will not go wrong. It's eating well. What you do not want, and it's in a green box, it's high in nitrogen, and it all it does is just gives you a green plant with all this growth. And if you're successful with it, stay with it. I'm not here to change you up. Mm-hmm. I just know high nitrogen applied to plants early in the season, especially tomato plants and peppers, can also lead to blossom end rot because of the rapid growth and the high jolt of nitrogen early in the season. But as that fruit develops, you know, you need that calcium element and you need to have good watering habits. Don't go from extreme dry to extreme wet or vice versa. Keep good watering habits with your tomato plants. And even though calcium might be available and your plants are dry for a long period of time, well, guess what? When that fruit's developing because there's a lack of moisture, the calcium's not getting up through the plant, through its vascular system, and producing that beautiful tomato for you. So all of those things come into play.
And if it's not broken, don't fix it.
That's right? What I say. So, you know, fertilization is important. Staking your tomato plants properly is important. I like to use, when I stake and you tie, use that stretch green tie. Don't use the ties that look like the little bread ties because there's wire in there. And it gets windy. We get into a storm situation. And as that plant's moving back and forth, that wire can cut through the stem. So that's very, very important as well. If you're trying to keep some diseases at bay, okay, don't water over top of your tomato plants. Always water down low. You can also use products like Mancozeb, copper fungicide. These are things you can use and use them proactively to keep disease issues at bay. You'll be glad that you did. You really will.
Mm-hmm. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And, you know, I'm just salivating right now. You've been talking about tomato plants, and BLT is really sounding good right about now.
I think just keeping your tomato plants healthy, you know, is so important. And using the right fertilizer is extremely important as well. And, you know, when you do that, you're keeping diseases at bay. You know, a lot of times you'll start seeing, at the latter part of the season, you start ending up with a late blight or, you know, just other types of diseases that tomatoes are so easily afflicted with. And just keeping them healthy and where they're not stressed all the time, you're going to have a better plant. That's the key.
Mm-hmm.
That is the key big time.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Don't forget, Taste of Cincinnati is going on this weekend. You know, it's going to be a little rainy, but that's okay because the lines are shorter. You can get to eat more food.
Only you, Ernie, only you. But, hey, when we come back, I'm going to give you five of my favorite tomato plants that I like. And if you want to share some of yours with us, 749-B105, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. It is going to be a great day to get something done in and around your house, to visit your locally owned, independently operated garden center or florist. Because a lot of people will be planning on going to some of our cemeteries and placing floral arrangements on the graves of veterans and family members, because this is the weekend where we reflect back.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I wish more people would do that and take it upon themselves just to pay a little visit to, mm-hmm. to those that served our country in the past, or even, you know, relatives, families, and friends. Great idea there, Ernie.
Mm-hmm.
You're always right on that one.
I try.
Hopefully. You know, we were talking about before we went into the break some of our favorite tomato plants, and one of mine, and it's a hybrid variety, is one called Celebrity.
Celebrity.
Yeah. I like Celebrity. Very medium-sized fruit, 7-8 ounces, crack-resistant, disease-resistant. And I just always have really had good success with Celebrity.
Uh-huh.
I like that one. It's a nice red tomato. And another one that I like a lot, I mentioned it a moment ago, is still the Sweet 100 Cherry Tomato. You cannot go wrong with that tomato.
Yeah.
It will bear fruit until frost.
Deliciously, deliciously sweet.
I always think about Lisa when you talk about those cherry tomatoes, because she would always, and Pappy too, they always would have those in pots or close to the porch area. And thinking, I never see anything on these. And then came out one morning, having coffee, and Lisa was already out working around in the lawn and stuff, and walked over, kind of looked at the plant, popped a couple of them off, and just ate them right on the spot. And
that's what it's all about.
And that's when I realized, oh, it's producing, but they never make it to the table. She just eats them right off of the vine.
You know, I think cherry tomatoes are a must-have, especially if you have little ones, little kids, because they can just bite into those. You know, it's not like a large tomato. You have to slice it up and hope they eat all of it or most of it, which they can't because, you know, their eyes are bigger than their stomach.
Sure.
So those little cherry tomatoes are perfect.
Mm-hmm. And they're great in the salad.
Yes.
Tony, we have Michelle on the line from Batavia, and she has found a mysterious worm on her tomato plant, wants to know what to do. Hi, Michelle. Thanks for hanging on. What kind of worm? What's it look like?
It blends in with the tomato, like the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really long. It's like 3-4 inches. And it's real big. And it's got white spikes on there.
Oh, that sounds like a hornworm. The tomato hornworm, yes. Do you, pretty big, good size?
Yeah, it's pretty big in size.
Oh, yeah, though, I'll tell you what, they can chow on the foliage of that tomato plant. It's like, it would be like having Ernie over for dinner. They can destroy a plant quick. You know what, you can pick those off, put on a pair of gloves, pick them off, or...
Okay.
You can also use a product out there called BT.
Okay.
Bacillus thuringiensis and dipel dust, and that will do the job for you. That would be a safe way to get rid of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And
usually take them up with a pencil because I don't want to touch it.
You can do it that way too. Pair of tweezers, whatever. Just as long as you remove those guys, you certainly want to do that. Mm-hmm. Or they'll have their way with your plant until you do so.
Because they usually grow big boys, better boys, Italian tomatoes, and cherry tomatoes.
Oh, I like the cherries. Do you can by any chance? You do any canning?
No.
No?
No.
Now, do you like a tomato to be real meaty, or do you like the pulp and the juice in it?
I like it real meaty, plus real juicy.
Oh, yeah. Where it just comes down like the side of your lips, you know, you bite into something.
Mm-hmm.
One other question. You like BLTs, right?
Oh, yeah, I love them.
Real mayo or Miracle Whip?
I use Miracle Whip.
Okay. And Miracle Whip's good. I like real mayo. Ernie won't even touch mayo.
Mm-hmm. But my tomatoes get really big. Because I got a secret way how I get them to grow.
A secret way.
Now, can you tell us, or is it classified? Would you have to kill us?
Can I tell you?
Yeah. Would you have to kill us if you tell us?
I go to, in the fall, when the tomato plants are gone, I dig up all the ground, and then I go to a horse farm.
Mm-hmm.
And get manure, get good topsoil, like Miracle-Gro and that, and I keep turning and turning and turning the ground. And then the following year in springtime when it's time to plant, I start, planting. Then I put more topsoil in there.
Mm-hmm.
And just keep watering that night.
There you go. That's your secret, right? So it's in the horse manure.
That's my secret.
Now,
I watered like about 10 o'clock. Between 10 and 11 o'clock at night, I'll water them.
I'm in
whether
bed.
It rains or not.
Huh. Interesting. Well, It sounds like you got it. You got it. An approach there. I'll tell you where we are. We're at 2060 Reading Road. So when you harvest and you have too many that you can't eat, we'll take them off your hands.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing. You have a great weekend.
You're welcome.
All right.
You too. Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and just a great way to get some of those good tomatoes. And
you know, I like listening to people's tips on growing tomatoes. Some people will always say, you know what I do? I take crushed eggshells and I put them in a hole before I plant my tomato plant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're like, well, what are you doing that for? Well, someone told me that's what you should do. And what you're getting, you know, you're supposed to get a calcium element from eggshells.
Right.
You know, so everyone has these little tricks, Epsom salts. Everyone, I use Epsom salts. You know, my only flair with that or take on that is I never know really how much or how little to use. And if you kind of go a little overboard, does it have a negative effect? You know, so it just all those kind of things come into play. And I'm sure her secret works for her. Everyone's got their own little secrets. But I'm going to continue the course and tell you another one of my favorites, okay, in my top five. And the other one is, it too is a small cherry-sized tomato. It's orange in color, called Sun Sugar.
Hmm.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. Vigorous. Crack resistant.
Very good.
Sweeter than its parent, Sun Gold. Sun Sugar. Your kids won't even, they won't even be able to leave that one alone. They'll be all over
They'll be
it.
Asking
all,
for more.
All over it. Absolutely. Another favorite of mine, sometimes this one has a tendency to crack a little bit, and I'm all right with that. You know, it doesn't have to be the perfectly round-shaped tomato. If it has a couple cracks or splits in it, I'm still going to cut into it and do it in.
Mm-hmm.
Is Black Krem. Now, that's an old heirloom. That's an old Russian variety. It's been around for a while. It's about an 8 ounce or so fruit. And it has this beautiful deep red flesh to it with a heavy green shoulder, which gives it that black hue from a distance. Sweet, sweet, and tasty. I love that one. But like I said, sometimes I'll have it where it might crack for whatever reason, but that, hey, that's okay. It doesn't bother me at all. Still a good tomato.
Mm-hmm. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back,
I have another favorite.
Oh.
And it's green, but it's not Green Acres.
Okay. We'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We've been talking about tomatoes, and Tony's going to bring one up, and he mentioned that it was green, but it isn't envy.
No. Green zebra. I like green zebra.
The green zebra.
The green zebra. It's fully ripened, too, when even though it's a bright green with some stripes of still even a lighter green color to it. Very tasty tomato. And that was one of my favorites at Vicky Tuis's tomato tasting last year. So that's I'm going to end it there. Those are my five favorites, you know, that I can tell you and think of right off the bat. Celebrity, the Sweet 100 Cherry, obviously. Sun Sugar, you can't go wrong with it. Black Krem and Green Zebra.
Wow.
What do you think?
That sounds awesome.
Do you have a favorite by chance, or any of your buddies down at Bowling say anything about a favorite of theirs?
The Early Girl was one that was talked about quite a bit yesterday.
You know, that was part of the history of it, too, that when I was kind of looking into it, that, you know, that it was the big boy, you know, the better boys. It was all the boys, and then the girls came along.
Mm-hmm.
So you got the Early Girl, and everyone's looking. That's it. That's probably about a 50 to 55-day tomato on average.
Mm-hmm.
So usually that's the one everybody's trying to shoot for. 4th of July is a good one, too, to get an early tomato in the season. Everyone's cranking and shooting for that first tomato, and believe me, I know they're better than what I purchased yesterday at the local supermarket. But hey, you got to do with what you got, right? You got to make it happen, like it or not.
That's all you can do is
that's
what you can do.
All you can do. All right, that's all about my tomatoes. If you have anything you want to share with us, please do so. If not, we're going to switch gears, and I want to talk a little bit about, again, I want to put some emphasis and focus on, you know, the amount of rain that we've had. We've really had a fair amount. And, you know, knowing that and how things behave with our pre-emergent products, you know, we were talking about how that barrier sets up on the top half-inch layer of the soil. You know, it's breaking down, folks. I'm telling you, it's breaking down. And if you want to stay on top of your game and you want to be, you know, still have that beautiful lawn or that beautiful landscape without having to get out there on your knees and pull weeds or even pay your lawn care company one more time to come in and spray, put down another pre-emergent, you know, put down another application. And real simple, you can use high yields turf and ornamental weed and grass stopper that has dimension in it. You can use that in your lawn. You can also use that in your landscape beds if you haven't already. Do it. I'm telling you, we've been moving through this spring season with a lot of moisture. That barrier is starting to get thinner and thinner and thinner, and eventually it's gone. And if you want a little protection, added value, get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. Pick up the All Seasons 2. That's the first step from Fertilume. It's got a little bit of nitrogen in it, 16% by weight. And again, that's got prodiamine in it. That's going to be effective. Or go and use Dimension, the high yields turf and ornamental weed and grass topper. You will be glad that you did. I'm telling you, I'm going to do it. I'm encouraging you to do it because this is how things get in. And you're going to give me a phone call later on in the season and say, hey, I'm on this three-step program, or I'm in this program and I'm starting to see things. That is why we can't determine how much rainfall we get in the course of a season. So that is one of those variables that occurs throughout the growing season, the whole spring and summer months, in addition to, you know, with the rainfall, when it gets dry and you're watering, that also is another variable. So all those things come into play. They all come into factor. Something else too, Ernie, while I'm thinking about this, is if you've been having some issues with grubs, take care of them. Put down the grub control product from High Yield, Grub Free Zone 2. Get it in the ground, you know, get it there. Let that rain take it and break it down and get it into the soil surface so it gets into the root systems of our turf. And when those grubs hatch, they're not going to be feeding on your lawn. And if you've been having some issues with grubs, and I've seen this, it's been the last couple seasons, you know, there's some grub activity out there. And if you have issues, take care of it, or you're going to be going to your local garden center or nursery later in the season, and you're going to be talking about how your turf just peels back. It's weak. It's tender. And you'll say, ah, there's a lot of grubs underneath. Sure there are. That's where the party is. And when you have a lot of moisture, like what we've been having, that makes it so easy for the female to penetrate the soil surface. It's not hard because it's dry. It's moist. She gets in there and she lays more eggs. She has more babies.
Right.
And more babies mean they eat more of the lawn. Take care of it. Grub Free Zone 2. Get it at your local garden centers and nurseries. Keep them out.
So I was, I'm a little surprised by that. I didn't realize that the amount of moisture would contribute to the amount of grubs in the lawn.
It makes it easier for the female to penetrate the soil surface and do her thing. It's a fact. Hey, you, cicadas, brother.
Yes.
What's going on? Is this like a group that doesn't know what time it is?
Well, they are a little early, and I was watching this special on television the other night. Has to be, they are attributing that to the global warming effects, and that they have now been moved out of their cycle and are about 3 years early.
You know, that's a whole other topic in itself. And boy, people argue that one tooth and nail, global warming. I know one thing. It's been warming up a long time ago because the glaciers used to be relatively close to the Cincinnati area. Right? It's been warm for some time. You're not saying anything.
No,
I'm just trying to poke
you,
buddy.
Trying to figure out where you're going.
Well, I don't know.
The mountains used to be underwater, too.
Yeah, that's a whole other topic in itself.
But
so that's why.
Brood. Remember the guy we had a couple of years ago?
Well, we talked to, you know, I'm sorry if I butcher his name. I'm not really sure. Is it Gene Kretzky? Is that his name from over at the College of Mount St. Joe?
Yeah. And
he's the cicada guru.
He was the speaker that they were talking with. And he said the concern is that these guys are early, that they may create another brood. And he says, we're watching evolution right here because of the global warming effect. These guys are 4 years early.
Mm-hmm.
That means, just like you were talking about the grubs, means they are mating earlier. And that's going to create another identifiable brood that's going to probably come back every 6 years.
The brown brood.
Yeah. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment when we come back.
Talk about some things that you're going to find at your local garden center that, you know, most of you, I know you've been busy planting things up in the landscape and so forth. Let's jazz it up with some artsy kind of stuff.
Nice. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Just before we went into the break, we were talking a little bit about the cicadas, and I've been seeing an awful lot of pictures posted on Facebook. And we had someone call us while we were in the break, didn't want to go on the air with us, but wanted to know if there was something she could do to keep them off her plants.
Yeah, there's a couple things that you can do. If the plants are not too big and you're able to purchase some netting, mm-hmm, to place over your shrubs or some of your younger, smaller trees, I would certainly do that, because I'll tell you something. Once a cicada female gets underneath the underneath branch side of the tree limbs, the young limbs, and she really cuts into that to lay her eggs, mm-hmm, and it's pretty damaging. And you'll see that in a couple of seasons after the fact. And you can still see some of that cicada damage on trees from years ago when they were last here. When she cuts into the branch, the underneath side, to lay her eggs, that just stays open. It grows open. You know, it's a wound.
Right.
And it can be quite ugly, too. And then sometimes if it's severe enough, you know, over time you get into some windy situations or there's thunderstorms throughout the season. A lot of times there's branches, because they're weakened, you know, they'll flag off or drop. But you can certainly use netting. Also, you can use, I wouldn't be hesitant to use anything with carbaryl in it, 7, as a deterrent against cicadas. They can be quite damaging, especially to young plants, young trees in particular.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just, I don't know, you just got to be careful.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. That leads me to another question. Our neighbor, Rook and Vicky, have a beautiful rose bush on the corner of, mm-hmm, their lot. And they want to know if they can move it and what's the right way to move it. It is a climber.
Ooh.
So I told them I would ask. We were over on the side of the house working on the canna bed, and which we're going to pop up here on our Facebook page. That they're looking awesome this year. And they walked over and asked what they should do about that rose bush.
Well, right now is not an ideal time to move a rose bush.
Okay.
My preferred method is, and even not in the fall, rose bushes have a totally different root structure. You could do it late summer, early fall, but they're going to have to cut it back. Don't, mm-hmm, get me wrong.
Okay.
I like to move them late winter, early spring. That's my preference. Not that you can't move them at any other given time,
sure,
and you wouldn't be successful. I find it late winter, early spring to be the ideal situation. And reason being is because when you lift that rose bush, and if it's been in the ground for quite some time, the root structures of rose bushes can be a pretty good size.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're trying to get as much of that root structure as you possibly can. So therefore, you typically don't. And moving it, I would cut it back, because when you move it, you don't get all the root structure. And when you do it in the spring, that's when things start flowing north, upward, from the root structure of that plant,
okay,
to push new growth. So without all that stuff on top, it's a lot less stress for that particular rose bush, especially the climbers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just best suited.
Gotcha.
Now, you could do it late in the year, but you're still going to have to cut it back. And just, you know, make sure that you firmly plant it in such a way that it's protected going through the winter months, it doesn't heave. And depending upon the type of rose bush too, I don't know if it's grafted onto another root structure or if it's on its own root. But when you replant, you know, you got to make sure that, you know, you take it to the bud graft.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes any sense to you or not.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, you know, that, you know, especially doing it late in the season, that helps protect that and keeps it from freezing if, in fact, it is grafted onto another rootstock, which is typically a Dr. Huey root. Sorry about that. And it's just one of those root structures that are It's very sound, and we've found in the past, this is a great topic for Tim Wood again, that, you know, we know that some rose bushes will do better on a Dr. Huey root versus its own root. But we're trying to lean and move towards growing shrubs, rose bushes in particular, on our own root structure, because if something does happen and the winter is severe, that if it that plant or that rose bush dies back to the ground, it's going to come back as the same species.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. So in my eyes, I would enjoy the bloom production that you're getting. You're talking about how beautiful it is.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a little out of bounds, maybe prune it to get it back into shape. If it's obstructing something, part of a driveway or part of a walkway. But my 2 cents worth is to move it late winter, early spring.
Okay, so
that would be
leave it where it is now, and then maybe February, March.
Right.
Pull it out of the
right.
ground.
Yeah, the other day.
First.
You know, and it's funny you're talking about that. The other day, we were doing a little cleanup around our place at Jackson's, and, you know, I had an old knockout rose bush. And it's like, okay, dude, you've seen better days. And fairly older and very woody down low. And what I did, we used the forklift. I wrapped the chain around the base of it and lifted it right out. And I'm going to tell you something. That root structure, it was long. I mean, it went underneath the gazebo and so forth.
Wow.
I was impressed with how large that root structure was. Hmm. I'm not kidding you. So sometimes, you know, rose bushes, the root structure can come quite large, become quite large. Therefore, you know, you don't get it all.
Right.
But when we pull that bad Oscar out, take it to the hopper. But, you know, talking about knockout roses, I will have to say this. I know back in 2012, the winter of 2012, a lot of our knockouts, I mean, they hit the canvas hard. I mean, they took it on the chin and went down for the 10 count.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say this. I've seen some beautiful knockouts this spring. And if you're using Fertilum systemic tree and shrub drench and keeping the rose slug off of them, and you're fertilizing on a monthly basis, your knockouts have to be stellar. They're really looking good this year. I'm not just saying that. And the other day I was making a comment to somebody about the knockouts. You know, they've been around for a while, and I'm not beating up on the knockout, but I'm telling you, this year I've seen some beautiful knockouts. And I just said to somebody the other day, when they're healthy and they're happy, they're a beautiful blooming shrub.
Mm-hmm.
You can't beat it. There's no doubt about it. And we still sell knockouts. So do a lot of other garden centers. Maybe not as many as we did in the past. But still, you know, if you have some knockouts you need to retire or you want to shape up your beds a little bit,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be hesitant to purchase another knockout at one of your local garden centers and nurseries. I really like the yellow one, too. It has a fragrance to it. And probably, for me, that's why I like food. That's why I like to smell good barbecue or good food. I guess that's my strongest sense. Mm-hmm. You know I keep my eyes aren't as good as they used to be. My hearing certainly isn't. So it's all in a taste bud and smell. So the yellow knockout's very fragrant. Go for it.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment when we come back.
Well, we still need to preface some of the things that you can do that's from a decorative standpoint in the landscape. You know, there's a lot of cool stuff and some water features we're going to talk about when we come back.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We talked an awful lot about perennials. We talked about rose bushes, the lawn, and your flower beds. But we also want to remind you this is a great day to get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center and think about some features in the lawn and the landscape.
Absolutely.
And one of my favorites is just a little sign I got from Bob Bard when we were out there visiting him a couple of years ago. And it says, always leave room in the garden for your angels to dance.
That's a good one. I like that.
Yep.
I thought you were going to tell me, if you see a weed, pull a weed.
If you see a fork in the road, take it.
Yeah, take it. You know, this is the time of year as well that as we're working, you know, in the landscape and around the house outside, take a look at some areas. You know, you might be able to put something whimsical there, or even a water feature, maybe a bird bath, mm-hmm. maybe a bench. We've been selling a lot of interesting, like, decorative artwork, not always necessarily, you know, it being a water feature, because a lot of times people don't want to fool with a water feature, and that's perfectly okay. However, some of these pieces that you can buy, it's garden art. You know, for example, they have these concrete birds in flight that really take on a neat look. Just anything that's whimsical. A lot of people are buying those spinners, Ernie, those kinetic spinners. You know, they move in opposite directions.
Right. I was just that was one of the conversations yesterday at the garage. Was someone asked me what's the story on those things? And I'm glad you asked that.
The story on those things is this, Ernie, on those things.
Yes.
You know, it just creates a whimsical element in the garden.
Sure.
And as, you know, it seems like it's been windy the last couple of years, too, in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And as those move around, they're mesmerizing.
Yeah, they are. It's a little something for the eye to enjoy.
It's pizzazz. It's really pizzazz.
I like pizzazz.
You know, create some interest in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, concrete turtles, tortoises, you name it. It's just people like that stuff. Frogs, you know, of various sizes. People like that kind of stuff in the garden. And I love it. I love it. I love it. Yeah. You like the, you know, I know you're big on the gazing balls.
Those and the gargoyles and...
We used to sell a lot of gargoyles a few years ago. There was an article that was in the paper... focusing or highlighting on the gargoyles that are above the cathedral down in Covington. Keep the evil spirits away, like you.
One of them is an elephant.
Was it?
Yeah.
So when was the last time you were in a cathedral?
They're 2 weeks ago.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
I was going to say, daggone it, they didn't keep you out, did they?
I walked right into that. But yeah, the one down in Covington, when you come right off the 12th Street... where it meets Madison, if you look up, the one on the corner is an elephant.
Interesting.
Yes.
You like elephants, too. I know that.
Yeah. Love them. But I also love the statue I got from you. We renamed him Hiram.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody comments on that when they walk up past that yard.
You know, I have to tell you a story. We buy concrete products from a different number of vendors. And one of them, Campagna, does some interesting stuff. And you were talking about the gargoyles and so forth, which they're various sizes, and there's a lot of mystique there. And talking about Hiram, he's really cool, too.
Yes, he is.
There's something wicked, you know, that's you got that little Harry Potter element about you. But it was a few years ago, we had purchased this devil from Campagna. They don't even do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a really interesting story. And we only had it for maybe a week and a half. Somebody was visiting a friend here from England and had it shipped over.
Wow.
But it was the coolest color on it. It was almost like a real deep reddish brown. And when it was wet, it was wicked looking. Yeah, but it's items like that. Now, I'm not into the gnomes. Are you?
Some of them are pretty cool. Others just look like they were thrown together to sell quickly. But... you know, some of the unique ones, yes.
What would be unique about it?
There are some
picking its nose, or what? What are you talking about?
No, sometimes they're sitting, like we have an old one that Pappy's had for a long time.
Yeah.
And he sits on you can put him on a bench or on the edge of a potted plant, got his legs crossed, and he's smoking a pipe. It's just really cool looking.
Yeah, so that's that element of whimsy, something different, you know, something speaking to you in the garden, or welcoming,
drawing
you in. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, something else, too, I like when people will incorporate an arbor of some sort and maybe put something vining around it, or will grow up over it, or incorporate it into an area where there's like maybe some tall evergreens or arborvitae, to where it draws you into another room.
Yeah.
And that's where the benches come into play, you know, a sitting area where you can go and maybe just take a magazine with you and a cup of coffee or a glass of iced tea and just sit down and relax.
And disconnect.
Know? And it's keeping those little rooms, like, in place.
Yes.
Cool stuff.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we're going to wrap up a few things you ought to keep in mind as we move into Memorial Day weekend. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your locally owned and independently operated morning garden show.
Garden guys.
Garden
We're independently
guys.
Owned and operated.
That's right.
Yes, we independently own ourselves and we independently operate ourselves.
Blended that in together.
Well put, Ernie. I like that.
We want to remind you it's going to be a great weekend to get some stuff done around your house, but please pause and remember those that have served and sacrificed and paid the ultimate price for us to live free in this wonderful country. And something else we want to remind you, too, before we slip out the door, is the B105's World Largest Garage Sale. It's coming up a week from tomorrow, Sunday, June 4th, 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Turfway Park in Florence. You can purchase your spot now at B105.com. Special thanks to Ohio Mulch and LKQ. Pick your pot. So I just want to just remind everybody, too, to get to the garden center today, and perennials are great to pick up.
They're starting to show a lot of color. Yeah. That's when you see them at their best right now. And, you know, hey, if we get a little shower today or tomorrow, still, we're open. Stop at your local independent garden centers and nurseries. We have undercover shopping. You can still pick some things up. Make it happen. Get things spiffed up for Monday because it's going to be a beautiful day.
And enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you next week.